Who I am and calls me.
That song almost came on in place of the bell, so I apologize for wonky tech. So hello again. I hope this shit was whatever it was. Yeah. Last week, as I had shared 2 weeks ago, I was in Florida. My niece was competing in the national equestrian finals for college, the collegiate finals. And it's relevant relevant because what I was so struck by, so it's eight teams, eight of the best equestrian teams, and then four other teams, total of 12. And the absolute sense of mudita. And mudita, sympathetic joy, is an example of that often given is the delight that a parent has in the child's achievement. So just imagine, if you will, these giant stadiums filled with parents whose kids are at the top of their collegiate game, as it were. And again, the level of mudita that certainly I felt and just felt like was pulsating, among other things, and the stress and all of that, but just sort of the delight and the teamsmanship of these schools. My daughter's a senior. I mean, my niece is a senior. And the sort of the parents that my sister and her husband have been with for 4 years. It was really a remarkable field to be in terms of a vibrancy of mudita. And I've shared over the years, I love sports and I love them for this reason, whether it's the Olympics, or I grew up in Pittsburgh, where we used to go to Pirate games and Steeler games and Penguins, the different sports teams. But this delight that can come in the really astonishing beauty when people are excelling at that which they love. And whether it's ballet or music or whatever it is, an astonishing array of which people can express beauty and creativity, but perhaps more than anything else, it's this congruence of expression of these young women, and it is all women, it's a women's sport, at the college level. And again, just being so struck by their confidence, and they've been working so hard for so a lifetime, and the way they carried themselves. It was really remarkable to behold, again, in the sense of a celebration of beauty, of these strong, young, athletic women. And being able to hold this, and how in our daily lives do we allow ourselves to be touched by this? How do we express it? I'm aware we're sort of on the eve of Earth Day. And as I was thinking this week about what to talk about, I kept wanting to be like, I don't want to talk about the destruction of the Earth. We've done that here before, and the ways and sort of the, even in psychotherapy, there's a field of working with climate change anxiety. And I was like, we are getting so much of that, and the despair that can come, that can be paralyzing. I can feel it in myself. Of like, I can't even really go there sometimes because it's so painful. And I've shared this before, but the woman who was head of organizing the Paris Climate Accord some time ago, when she initially started the job with the UN, had been asked, do you think it's possible to get all the countries on the earth together to sign this accord? And she's like, no. And then she was like, oh wait, that's my job. That's what I've been tasked to do. And in her so doing, trying to coordinate this effort, she got so burned out. She went to study at Plum Village with Thich Nhat Hanh, and really just so full of the despair, like, oh, what's going to happen? I can't do this. And he was saying to her, it has to come from love. We have to be able to love the earth in order to save it. We have to be able to love our lives to be able to embody them. And where can we find and touch into that which we love, that which is beautiful? That's what brings us joy. And wanting to talk today about these integral threads of beauty and joy and our ability to stay buoyant in times that are so challenging. And the news, not even go there. There's just so much, you know, the shootings and the wars and again, what's happening with the climate and how do we stay afloat? And I think I've shared this before in other talks about this system of ours, this nervous system, the way that our brains are, we're not really built for this world. There's such an astonishing amount of overwhelm from the phones, from the computers, from the amount of stimulus. Then we think about where the brain evolved. It was a long time ago in a world where we were outside all the time and moving. And for so many of us, we don't do much of either of those things in terms of what our jobs require or our lives require, being still a lot and inside. And being able to keep this in the awareness, and our awareness is, as I speak with so many people, are just talk about being overwhelmed. It's like, yeah, there's a way that just by our living in April of 2022 comes with being a sense of overwhelm. So then how do we adjust and how do we make choices to counterbalance that and to be intentional of, oh yeah, there is a certain base level of overwhelm of for this poor nervous system that was not wired for this day. So, okay, how do we take care of this nervous system of ours? Tend to it, acknowledge, oh yeah, you know, I forget when Wadsworth was alive a couple hundred years ago, the world is too much with us. But that was then, you know, hundreds of years ago. And so now the sense of the impingement of all the simulation that can come. Okay, so what's the respite or the antidote to this? And I think allowing ourselves to cultivate a sense of joy and beauty and awareness. And in a way, those three words are synonymous. Of when we are aware, we can take in that which is beautiful. Yeah. That boredom has been said, oh, you're just not paying attention. If you're bored, you're not paying attention. And how can we drop down into the ever deepening strata of awareness to be able to abide in that which is beautiful? I want to share it, if I can find it, from John O'Donohue's book on beauty. I might not be able to pull it out. I don't even know. I can tell the story without it quoting it. He talks about being on the west coast of Ireland, and there was an art exhibit, and a farmer who didn't have very much education and had never really, he comes to the art gallery but one time a year. And he was in the art gallery and the artist was showing him around and explaining all the points of his paintings and what made them come alive. And the farmer was like, this is so beautiful. Thank you. I would never have known this. And there's a word, it's in Gaelic. I won't even try to pronounce it, but he's like, I don't know anything about this, but I do have this one sense. And the artist was like, what is that? And it's like the sense of when where he lives on a lake, where his farm is, and when the water in the lake is so still and the wind is so still that he can hear the inner movement of the lake and to hear the movement of the grasses, and that's his practice. And then the line in the book is sort of these ever deepening layers of awareness. And when we allow ourselves to keep dropping down out of the busyness, like the current kind of constant pulsating of the mind and distractions and attentions, and be able to drop into a stillness, there's an ever widening depth to the beauty that we can take in and that we can also embody. How can we allow ourselves to feel into our own radiance? You know, in these practices are saying, here, this is how you do it. You know, practicing with the divine abodes of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Can we allow ourselves to live in those realms for a moment at a time? You know, and again, the task at hand is only as large as this one moment. It's not some far off land that we have to trek to. It's right here. And we allow ourselves to drop down into that which is beautiful, which is the doorway of awareness. Wanting to reach for this book, but I haven't noted it that well. Where does beauty dwell? on ancient and foreign things that stir within our hearts, memories from the time before the mind was born. Within us are depths that keep watch. These are depths that no words can trawl or light unriddle. Our neon times have neglected and evaded the depth kingdoms of interiority in favor of the ghost realms of cyberspace. Our world becomes reduced to intense but transient foreground. We have unlearned the patience and attention of lingering at the thresholds where the unknown awaits us. Let me read that again. We have unlearned the patience and attention of lingering at the thresholds where the unknown awaits us. We have become haunted pilgrims addicted to distraction and driven by the speed and color of images. I just feel like that's so beautifully said. In this ghost realm that we can inhabit by default and that we are encouraged by any number of sources to actually inhabit, and being able to see it as, oh, this is a ghost realm. This is not where this nervous system wants to abide, nor was it wired to live in. So how can we cultivate the practice of seeing that which is beautiful, which requires relearning the patience to be able to take it in? You know, the fact of like, hurry up. We missed it. We missed life. And we can become desensitized to things. I remember I had the great fortune to spend the summer in Kenya. And at the end of it, I was there about 9-10 weeks. And at the end of it, people had come over to do a trek on Kilimanjaro. And we were in the van together. And someone was like, oh my God, stop. There are zebras. And the rest of us who'd been there, so I'm like, yeah. Ever, you know, we just become so used to things, and that it's a sort of a lack of attention. It's sort of being in a sleep mode, you know, sleepwalking. And how can we interrupt the pattern of sleepwalking, which sometimes can just be self-protection? There's so much coming at us. There's a way we can numb out or disassociate. Sometimes that is a skillful response. And other times it's like, wait, how can I, you know, the line from Galway Canals, the sound, reteach ourselves our own loveliness. Reteach ourselves a way of seeing that which is lovely and around us. To be held by Linda Hogan. To be held by the light was what I wanted. To be a tree drinking the rain, no longer parched in this hot land. To be roots in a tunnel growing, but also to be sheltering the inborn leaves and the green slide of mineral down the immense distances into infinite comfort. And the land here, only clay, still contains and consumes the thirsty need the way a tree always shelters the unborn life, waiting for the healing after the storm, which has been our life. Another expression of beauty, Small Kindnesses by Nusha Labres. I've been thinking about the way when you walk down a crowded aisle, people will pull in their legs to let you by, or how strangers still say bless you when someone sneezes, a leftover from the bubonic plague. Don't die, we are saying. And sometimes when you spill lemons from your grocery bag, someone else will help you pick them up. Mostly we don't want to harm each other. We want to be handed our cup of coffee hot, and to say thank you to the person handing it, to smile at them and for them to smile back, for the waitress to call us honey when she sets down the bowl of clam chowder, and for the driver in the red pickup truck to let us pass. We have so little of each other now, so far from tribe and fire, only these brief moments of exchange. What if they are our true dwelling of the holy? These fleeting temples we make together when we say, here, have my seat. Go ahead, you first. I like your hat. What if these are the true dwelling of the holy? These fleeting temples we make together. Sorry, I ask you to close your eyes. This exchange here today, you know, this is part of this making holy the temple of our exchanges. What if we allow ourselves permission to live in the temple of the holy by paying attention enough to say, oh, here, go first. Or to look the person that hands us a cup of tea or coffee and say, thank you. These exchanges are holy. This is the abiding in joy and beauty. We can move in the world as a poet does, to take note of that which is beautiful in the most mundane. There, in this meditative space, to bring in Mary Oliver's voice. One evening I met the mango. At first there were four or five of them in a bowl. They look like stones you find in the rivers of Pennsylvania when the waters are low, that size and almost round, mossy green. But this was a rich house and clever too. After salmon and salads, mangoes for everyone appeared on blue plates. Each one cut in half and scored and shoved forward from its rind like an orange flower, cubist and juicy. When I began to eat, things happened. All through the sweetness, I heard voices, men and women talking about something, another country in trouble. It wasn't my language, but I understood enough. Jungles and death, ships leaving harbors, their holds filled with mangoes, children brushing the flies away from their hot faces as they worked in the fields, men and gun. The voices all ran together, so that I tasted them in the taste of the mango, a sharp gravel in the flesh. Later in the kitchen, I saw the stones like torn out tongues embedded in honeyed centers. They were talking among themselves, family news, a few lines of song. This story is from the sight of a mango. How can we allow ourselves to slow down enough to see the stories in berries that we may be fortunate to have for breakfast? The sip of tea, the sip of coffee, the food we may or may not share with another, the breath of air when we wake up, when we step outside. This is where beauty lives, if only we give ourselves permission to drink it in. Ask each of us to call to mind, what are some of the most beautiful places you've been? And it might be your grandmother's porch. It doesn't have to be the most grandiose, but just the places when you think, or the invitation is, what are some beautiful places? What comes to mind? Where does the mind take you? The mountains in Colorado, to the beach, to the woods you might have played in as a child, to the creek, the backyard, a rose garden. Sitting with your grandchild, sitting with your grandmother, just what is evoked when you consider what is beautiful to you? What touches the heart? The sunrise, the sunset, the moonrise, the stars overhead. Words on a page of a book you love, the voice, the laughter of someone you love. What's beautiful to you? Almost having this be a repeating question to allow the basket, so to speak, to be filled of, oh, perhaps there are so many things that are beautiful. A certain piece of art that may be in your house or in a museum that you've seen. Can the net be cast wide to include all the things that may be beautiful to you? So we consider the richness of the natural world, its flowers and trees and animals, those animals that fly, animals that swim and run. The delight we may see, and the delight we may feel when we see a newly born fawn. What touches your heart when you consider that which is beautiful? Intentionally lingering here in the hopes that new images come of that which is beautiful if you reflect through your life places and things and ways that you have been touched in that place. Like, oh, things that sort of inspire a sense of awe and beauty as a way of ideally sort of restoring to ourselves this conversation with that which is beautiful, the remembering, oh yeah, there are all these ways that we can be touched, that our hearts can be buoyed and brightened by that which is beautiful when we slow down enough to take it in, the sight of a hummingbird, the feel of the sun's rays on our face, the cool breeze, the water from the faucet. May we make a prayer of our awareness as a doorway into that which is beautiful and that which is joyful.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.